We are holding Samach Gimel Omer Aleph by the Mishnah, continuing on the topic of things that you're not allowed to wear on Shabbos. The previous Mishnah we said that we said things that you're not allowed to wear on a Daraisa, things that a woman is not allowed to wear on a Daraisa level, and now we're going to talk about things that a man is not allowed to wear on a Daraisa level. Now, we're not saying, this is similar to previously, we're not saying that if a woman wears them, it's mutter daraisa. For a woman to wear them, we're going to mention various kinds of weapons in our Mishnah. For women to wear them would be a whole other matter. There's a matter of Yovash Gever. So therefore we're mentioning men. The point is that even men that wear them are going to be, or carry them, whatever, are going to be chayev on a daraisa level for carrying on Shabbos. If women did, then they'd be chayev not only for that, but they'd also be violating the issue of Yovash Gever. The Mishnah says, "Lo yotzei ish lo b'tzayif." A man is not allowed to go out on Shabbos with a sword, v'lo b'keshes, or with a bow, v'lo b'tris, or with a shield, v'lo b'ala, or with an ala, which we'll see in the Gemara what that is, v'lo b'roimach, or with a spear. The yotzei chayev chatas, and if he goes out on Shabbos carrying any of those things, then he's chayev chatas because it's not considered a tachshit, it's considered a masa, it's considered a burden, and so he's carrying on Shabbos on a daraisa level. Obviously, only if it's in a real rishus rabbi. Rabbi Eliezer says that actually they're considered ornaments, and therefore he wouldn't be chayev on a daraisa level. Therefore, he says on a daraisa level he would be allowed to wear them, and okay, maybe midrabbanan would be also. The chamim, which are the same as the Tanakhama, they say, I can show you that weapons are not considered a tachshit, but ain't an el lignai. Tachshitim are considered a derogatory thing. So you can't say, weapons are considered a derogatory thing. So you can't say that they're meant to be a beautiful thing. If they were meant to be a beautiful thing, then they would still exist on Mashiach time. And we know they won't. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, V'chitasu chavoysam le'itim. The Pasuk says, the famous Pasuk, on Mashiach time, they will chop off their swords and make them into plows. V'chamisiseihem l'magmeres. And they'll cut off their spears and make them into pruning knives. Lo yisa goyo goy cherev. One nation won't lift up a sword against the other one, and they won't learn war anymore. So if they were considered tachshitim, then they wouldn't make farm tools out of them, but they'd still keep them for the decorative aspect. The fact that not shows that they were gnai, say the Chachamim. Therefore, even now on Shabbos, then therefore you can't consider them a tachshit. Okay, we'll see the continuation of the discussion on that in the Gemara. Continues the Mishnah, another din. A biris, which we learned the other day, the Gemara is going to explain on other days that it means a garter, something that you use to hold up a sock. Tahora is tahor, meaning it's not metabol truma. The yotzin baba Shabbos, you're allowed to go out wearing it on Shabbos, because whether a man or a woman, they're not going to take it off. They're not going to take it off, even if it's fancy and nice looking. They're not going to take it off and show it off to their friends because then their sock will fall down. That's what Rashi says. We'll talk on Amud Beis. Tosfos learns a little bit differently, but anyway, so you're allowed to wear a biris, a garter on Shabbos, but kvolim tmeim, but chains, and we'll see in the Gemara what these chains are tamei, meaning the makabel tuma, the ein yotzin behind the Shabbos. You can't go out with them on Shabbos, as we'll see in the Gemara why. Okay, so first of all, the Gemara says, "My ba'ala." Four out of the five weapons in our Mishnah, we recognize easily what those are. But what is the fifth one? What is an ala? The answer is kulpa. It's a kulpa. Most of the Mephoshim explain that it means a club. Some of them add that it's more like what's called in English a mace, a club that has nails or spikes or whatever on one end of it, and it's a pretty effective weapon. The Rambam explains in Pirush HaMishnayos that it's actually another kind of shield that's shaped differently than a tris. A tris, he says, is more triangular, and an ala is round. Okay. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Tachshit. So we're saying any of those weapons you're not allowed to wear on Shabbos. So we're saying Rabbi Eliezer is saying they're considered tachshitin, and the Chachamim are saying that They're considered a gnai, and you're not allowed to wear them on Shabbos.
Okay.
We say that Rabbi Eliezer says that they're considered ornaments, and the Chachamim argued with him and said if they were ornaments, then they wouldn't be bottle in Mashiach's time. Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Amru loy Rabbi Eliezer, the chimei achad, the tachshitin hein loy. If you're saying that they're ornaments, then as we asked in the Mishnah, if name ma'ahim b'tilin limoit Mashiach, then why are they bottle in the times of Mashiach? Why are we saying that in Mashiach's time, they're going to be turning them into farm tools? On the other hand, so he says it's not because they're gnai, but fishen and tzrichin, because at that point they're not going to need them as weapons anymore. And therefore, once they're not needed, it's shenem lo yisav goy or goy cherev, because I agree, as the pasuk says that no nation will lift up a sword against any other nation, so fine, then there's not going to be a need for it, so therefore they're going to turn them into farm tools, but not because they have any objection, not because they have any objection to having them. So the question is, okay, so what? So if there's no objection to having them, but to having a noy ba'alma, okay, so then they could keep them around as something ornamental. Mela, if you're saying that, Mela, if you're saying like a chachamim, that it's a gnai, then okay, we understand. That when Mashiach comes, we're going to want to get rid of that gnai. We're not going to want to have around something that reminds us of the previous state of the world where people are always fighting with each other and therefore they're going to destroy them. But if Rabbi Eliezer is saying tachshitin hein loy, and according to him, the only reason they're going to get rid of them in Mashiach time is because you don't need them. Okay, you don't need them, but so what? You might as well keep them around and enjoy them for ornamental purposes. But Abaya says, because Rabbi Eliezer is going to agree, you're not going to have them. Limoy to Mashiach, midi to have a shraga b'tiara, because it'll be like a candlelight in the sun. Meaning, in other words, that now we're going to see soon in the Gemara where Rabbi Eliezer gets his idea that they're considered ornaments. He bases himself on a pasuk, but still, he takes the view. Okay, so they still are going to have an ornamental purpose, but in Mashiach's times, where they're not needed for that kind of purpose, then it's not considered ornamental anymore. In other words, he says it's not that a sword itself, for example, is something beautiful. It's beautiful, let's say, it's beautiful because it demonstrates the gvura of the owner of the sword. So therefore, in Mashiach's times, when there won't be war anymore, then that aspect of it won't be necessary, and therefore it'll be like having a candle around in the sunlight where it's not necessary. So it's not necessary, and therefore they're going to get rid of them and turn them into farm tools, but not that there is now or is going to be then any gnai to it. It would just be unnecessary, he says. Opliga de Shmuel. An interesting point, by the way. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he analyzes this and discusses then in that case. What about if you have something which is not a gnai, not now and not in the future, can you wear it on Shabbos? In particular, you have a tshuva talking about how Hatzalah members wearing their walkie-talkies. We know mice in B'chol Yom, that we go out and we see people in shul, hopefully very soon, hopefully if Mashiach will come and we won't need Hatzalah, but whatever. Up until now, in shul, we've seen Hatzalah members on Shabbos carrying around their walkie-talkies on their belt. How are you doing that? Isn't it considered carrying on Shabbos? So there's actually a tshuva of Reb Moshe where he analyzes it in the light of our Gemara over here. Unlike weapons, which the Chachamim are telling us are a gnai, so much so that they're going to be bottle lost in love, a walkie-talkie is not something of gnai, even now. If you can argue it's not necessary in Mashiach's time, it's fine. But Rabbi Eliezer still has no problem just because something is unnecessary in Mashiach's time of you carrying it now. So by the same token, a walkie-talkie can be worn on your belt on Shabbos when you're using it for that kind of purpose. Okay. Anyway. The Gemara says, "Kliga de Shmuel." This discussion over here, this braisa that said that the Moisa Mashiach is not going to be weapons anymore, goes against what Shmuel says. The Amar Shmuel ain bein ha'olam hazeh l'moisa Mashiach ela shibud golias bovad, because Shmuel says that there's no difference between olam hazeh and the times of Mashiach, except that we won't be subjugated by the goyim anymore. In other words, he says that other than that, the natural things of the world will still exist. Tosas points out, actually, I mean, obviously, even Shmuel knows there's going to be other differences. Yerushalayim is going to be rebuilt, the Mishkan is going to be rebuilt. So, okay, his ein bein doesn't mean that that's the only difference. It means that's the only, as far as the relevant details that we're dealing with over here, there's not going to be any difference. Mashiach will be the king, Mashiach will be the ruler, and everybody will be subjugated to him, but other than that, the world will still continue to exist as it is now. People will still be born and die, and everything else will still go the way it is now. So therefore, according to Shmuel, Shenema, and the reason is, it says that, Shenema, Kila Yachdel Ebyen, the Ken of Aret, because the Pasuk says, there won't cease to be any poor people in the world, meaning, in other words, it implies that as long as the world exists in its present form, there's going to be poor people. So therefore, Rashi says, let's say, for example, you have now, let's say, a pasuk in Zechariah, the last pasuk of Zechariah, we read it as Zaftorah on Shabbos Cholamoed Sukkos, on the first day of Sukkos rather. We say the lo yeh knani oy beveis Hashem tzvakos. There won't be a knani, which the Gemara in Pesachim explains is short for kanani. There won't be any more people in the house of Hashem. So Shmuel says that's not talking about Yemos Mashiach. That's talking about the next stage, which is called Olam Haba. Now, what is Olam Haba? We've talked about before a couple of different possibilities, what Olam Haba is. The Rambam learns that Olam Haba means the world of Neshamas. The Rambam learns that after Mashiach comes, after Tchiyas HaMeisim, there's going to be a point when people are still going to continue to pass away, because again, Olam Kimin Hagen Noyeg, there comes a point eventually when those Neshamas have a world of their own, disembodied from the Gufim, and that's what's called Olam Haba. Over here, obviously, it can't mean that because we are talking about something physical. We are talking about when he says that Olam Kimin Hagen Noyeg, then it has to mean something involving Gufim. So it means the time after Tchiyas HaMeisim. Obviously, even Shmuel knows that there is going to be a point of Tchiyas HaMeisim. It's a basic thing of Yiddishkeit, and that is obviously not Olam Kimin Hagen Noyeg anymore. That's not that people are coming alive again. Is not the world behaving as it normally did. But in that time already, then fine, there won't be poor people, and then there won't be war and so forth. But the point is, the Braisa that referred all this to Yemos HaMashiach, so this is, you know, we know the famous thing that Eber talked about a lot of times based on earlier sources, the idea that there's going to be two stages in Yemos HaMashiach. That's one of the sources for that is our Gemara over here, based on what Shmuel is saying, that there's two stages. There's a first stage when Mashiach ruled and still Olam Kimin Hagen Noyeg. People are still born and die, and everything else still continues to happen as it is now, except that now the Jewish people are on top. And then a later stage when there's Tchiyas HaMeisim and all the other supernatural things that take place. And then at that point, yes, Shmuel is saying then there won't be any war, and then there won't be any more poor people anymore. So in other words, it's not so much that he disagrees with the premise that there's going to be a point when there's no more weapons and no more war, but he refers it to the second period of Olam Haba rather than the first period called Yemos HaMashiach.
But it's still not consistent. His stance is not consistent to, in the absolute, to say that the world is not going to change when there are two phases and one of them, the world is going to change.
Because what he's saying is Ein Ben Elam Azeh Limos HaMashiach. Again, you have Yemos HaMashiach versus you have Olam Haba. So Shmuel is saying Yemos HaMashiach, that first stage is not going to be any different. The Braisa that used the expression Yemos HaMashiach, the Chum asked, Ma Mahin Bekelem Limos HaMashiach, evidently disagrees with Shmuel, because the Braisa, the Chachamim are saying that already in Yemos HaMashiach, already in that first stage, there's going to be that difference. In fact, by the way, the Lechem Mishnah in Hilchos Truva, the Rambam mentions, and also in Hilchos Malachim, the Rambam mentions this concept there's a difference between Yemos HaMashiach and Olam Haba. There, the Rambam is using Olam Haba in the sense of the world and the Shamas. And he also mentioned Shmuel. He also mentioned Shmuel's statement, "Ein Ben Olam Hazeh Limos HaMashiach Ela Shibud Malchus." And actually, the Lashon Mishnah actually points out a seeming contradiction. On the one hand, the halacha is like the chachamim, that the weapons are going to be ignai because they're not going to be needed in Yemos HaMashiach. On the other hand, we're saying, Ein ben Olam Hazeh L'Yemos HaMashiach. He has a long explanation about it, but one thing is, he says that when the Rambam uses Shmuel's expression, Ein ben Olam Hazeh L'Yemos HaMashiach, he's using the wording, but not necessarily in the same meaning. He agrees already that in the first stage there's not going to be war anymore. There's still, he says, Olam Kamin Hagenoyeg as far as other things. There's still going to be people born, people dying, people etc. But as far as the matter of warfare, there he would say that in fact that's going to cease once Mashiach comes, once the first stage comes. So you have the Braisa saying that already in the first stage there's not going to be war. Shmuel says that not. Olam Kamin Hagenoyeg, even as far as warfare. Again, the Lacha Mishnah is saying that the Rambam might sort of take a middle view, that the Rambam might say that there won't be war, but there will be other things that are Kamin Hagenoyeg. And the Gemara says, Mitzayel Le Rav Chiya Ba'Abba, the Braisa, on the other hand, supports what Rav Chiya Ba'Abba says, the Amr Rav Chiya Ba'Abba, Kol Nevi'im Le Nisnabu Elali Moshe Mashiach. All the promises that we have in the Nevi'im of the things that are going to happen, besides the mentions that the Jewish people are going to be victorious, and besides, but for example, let's say the Nevuah that it says that there won't be warfare and that there won't be poor people and that wild animals will cease, which by the way, that Rambam mentions that one about the wild animals also is not necessarily meant literally. At least in the first stage of Mashiach, it means the wild animals will still be doing the normal things they do, and they'll still be dangerous to people. The Rambam learns that it means that the Goyish nations, which are wild and destructive, like wild animals, will be tamed under the leadership of Mashiach. Anyway, so Rav Chiya Ba'Abba says all of those various promises are all Yemos HaMashiach, is all the first stage. Abba wa Olam Abba, but when it comes to the second stage, Olam Abba, then the pasuk says, Ayin lo rasa alekim zolosecha, no eye but yours, Hashem, has seen what you're going to do. So therefore, in other words, what goes on in Olam Haba, again, whether we mean the Olam Haba as in the world of the Neshamas, or whether we mean, now by the way, the Rambam learns that Olam Haba means the world of pure Neshamas. Although over here, necessarily, he would have to say it has a slightly different meaning, because again, we're talking about whether there's going to be weapons or not. The Ramban disagrees with that and says that no, once the people come alive by Tchias HaMetim, they're never going to pass away again. Olam Haba means a world where there are going to be neshamas in bodies, but the bodies themselves are going to be on a higher level, and therefore they're not going to be like the bodies that we're familiar with. And Chassidus agrees with that and says that yes, there's not going to be a point where the people who come alive by Tchias HaMetim are going to die, and then there's going to end up being a world of only neshamas. No, because Hashem created the world that he should have a din of a tachtonim, and that means there have to be bodies. Those bodies are just going to be on a higher level than they are now. So Rav Chiya Ba'Abba is saying that there is actually that difference, that even in Yemos HaMashiach, even in the first stage, already all those promises of the Nevi'im are going to come true. That works with the Braisa, because again, the Braisa had said the same thing, that in Yemos HaMashiach already there won't be weapons. Rav Chiya Ba'Abba and the Braisa are disagreeing with what Shmuel says, that in the time called Yemos HaMashiach, there's not going to be any difference and there's still going to be weapons. Okay. That's one version of the discussion. The Ikadami, a different version of the discussion, goes like this. It starts out again with the Chachamim saying to Rabbi Eliezer, if weapons are considered ornaments, according to you, and he's going to quote soon a pasuk in Tehillim that shows that, then again, the Chachamim ask him, like in the first version, why are they going to be bottled in Yemos HaMashiach? And in the second version, he tells them, "Afli Moshe Mashiach in Yitzchelim." As a matter of fact, they're not going to be bottled in Yemos HaMashiach. During that first stage, after Mashiach begins his kingship, there's still going to be weapons. There's still going to be fighting going on in the world. Maybe not between Jews and Goyim, but there'll be fighting among the Goyim themselves. For example, also, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out they may still keep around the weapons to as a sign of Gvura, like now we have the weapons of Esav. Up until now, Esav was Valchava Apichia, and now we took it away from him, so they might keep him around for that purpose. But they're not going to be bottle during that first stage of Yimosa Mashiach. If they're going to be bottle, okay, but that'll be in the later stage. That'll be in the stage called Olam Haba. In that case, the Heiner de Shmuel, that second version agrees with what Shmuel is saying, that in the first stage, Limoisa Mashiach, there won't be any difference of the way things work nowadays. Or Pligid, the Rechir Ba'aba, and in that case, that second version disagrees with Rechir Ba'aba, at least Rebbe Eliezer's opinion, and the second version disagrees with Rechir Ba'aba, which is that all of the promises of the Nevi'im, including the promise that weapons will be gone, by Yisa Goy or Goy Cherev, and now they'll turn them into farm implements, is already talking about Limoisa Mashiach. Okay. So those are the different opinions on that subject. There's obviously a lot more to talk about. The Rebbe once wrote to somebody that he's crazy about Mashiach, and we know that always formed a huge amount of everything that Rebbe talked about all the years. So there's of course a lot to talk about, a lot that we could mine in sichas and maimonim for about different things. But we have to go on. So we'll leave that for some Fabringen. Okay, going on. Abaya says to the Dini Yitzchak, but Amilor of Ivya. Another version is that Abaya said it to the Ivya. But Amilor of Yosef to the Dini. Another version of Yosef said it to the Dini, but Amilor of Ivya. Another version is Rav Yosef said it to the Ivya. But Amilor Abaya of Yosef. The fifth version is that Abaya said it to the Yosef. So the Gemara wants to have all the possibilities because the Gemara wants to accurately give over who said to who. Anyway, so one of these five possibilities, somebody said, one of them said to another one, my time at the Rebbe Eliezer, where does Rebbe Eliezer get his reason? Where does he get his idea that weapons are considered tachshit, da'omar tachshit in hain, that he says that weapons are considered tachshit in hain, right? So like this, dichtiv, you have a pasuk in Tillim, in Kapitel Memhei, chagur charbecha al yorech giver, mighty man, powerful man, tie your sword on your thigh, it's your glory and your beauty. So therefore, said Rabbi Eliezer, saying, so you see that a sword is a glorious and beautiful thing, and therefore it can be considered a tachshit. And therefore he says even la'asid lava. So okay, at some point la'asid lava they're going to be bottled, fine, not necessarily because they were gnai, he says, but because they're not going to need them anymore. But at least now they're considered an ornament.
Which is true in a way, because you see all the royal family, they're carrying swords. They never used them. They still don't, you know, they carry them all the time in all the official ceremonies.
The Chachamim agree. The Gemara is going to say now, I mean, the Pasuk is actually talking metaphorically about Divrei Torah, but again, the Chachamim are not disagreeing that nowadays a weapon can be considered in a certain sense a tachshit for a person. They're just saying, on the other hand, really, if you think more deeply into it, what does a sword represent? It represents, even with the royal family or whatever, it represents that they have the power to take out a sword and kill somebody in principle. Okay, right now they're not doing it. Right now they're using it ornamentally. But really, it's considered a gnai, say the Chachamim, and we see that Ba'asid Lava, we see that already in Yimoyis HaMashiach, or at least in Olam Haba, as the case may be, they're going to be bottled and they're going to be turned into farm implements. So okay, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that even then it's not a gnai, it's just they're not going to need them anymore. But the Chachamim are saying that essentially there is a gnai, say it. The fact that it has an element of tachshit now also is not enough to allow you to wear it on Shabbos. Anyway, so Rabbi Eliezer says that the process is...
What do you mean by gnai?
It means, in other words, it's a degrading thing. It's a degrading thing that there should have to be weapons in the world. The fact that weapons have to exist, the fact that people have to fight, is considered a gnai. It's considered a derogatory and embarrassing thing. And therefore, in that sense, it can't really be considered a decoration to the extent that you could wear it on Shabbos. Okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Eliezer is saying you have this pasuk that shows that a sword is an ornament. However, Rav Kahana asks Magre de Rav Huna, what do you mean that from that pasuk, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that it's considered an ornament? after all, that pasuk is not really talking about an actual sword. That pasuk is talking metaphorically about divrei Torah. And in other words, the pasuk is saying just as much as a person needs to continuously learn his Torah and have it ready at hand, just as much as a soldier has his sword available right away when he needs it. So that quote of Ahadarefa. So now where do we see this? Divrei Torah. Marsha explains that the whole capital over there is talking in praise of a king. Etc. But you can see the psukim before and after it. The psukim before and after this one, Chagur Chavacha, are talking about what he accomplishes in Limud HaTorah, in Limud HaTorah, in Midas Torah, and whatever. And therefore, we're not going to have all of a sudden in the middle of pasuk they are talking about an actual sword. It has to be talking about the same thing. That it means that his Torah and his mitzvahs and his ma'aseh and tovim or whatever are like a sword that he has ready at hand. So what do you mean that shows that a sword is considered something ornamental? On the way, so Magre that everyone says, fine, but nevertheless, a nikra yotzimide pshote. But still, a pasuk doesn't lose its simple meaning. Yes, we doubt in a pasuk that it means it's talking about divrei Torah, but nevertheless, the fact that the pasuk phrased it in this way shows that there's a pshote shal mikra also, and that we have to consider also. And there, in other words, the idea is that the Ramban explains that that Rabbi Eliezer takes the view, if in fact putting on a sword was considered a gnai, then the pasuk wouldn't use it as a metaphor for Torah. So the fact that the Torah chooses that as a metaphor, the fact that the pasuk chooses that as a metaphor for Torah shows that there's a certain ornament in wearing a sword, which is what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. Amr of Kahana, so Rav Kahana says in that connection, you know what? Now I found out something new. When I was 18 years old, I had learned by that point the entire Shas. Shas, by the way, is something that was changed by the censor. It's really supposed to be Talmud. At some point, the censor decided they didn't like the word Talmud, and they changed it in as many places as they could. But he means he had learned the entire Talmud, which means we know that Talmud means the analysis of what it says in the Mishnayos and Braises, and being able to derive what the reasons behind them are, and being able to deduce one din from another. So by the time I was 18, I had already learned all that. And still, the loy have a yadina to end mikri yesim adet shutai ad hashta. Still, until now, until my brother Ravona told me, I didn't know that a pasuk never loses its simple meaning. Now, what does he mean by that? I mean, how does he not know such a basic thing? So the Ma'arav Chayes explains, obviously he knew that when it comes to psukim that describe mitzvahs, then obviously those have to be kipshutai. The Gemara mentioned in Yevamos that there's one single pasuk in the Torah where we gaushin in a way that goes against the pshat in connection with the halachas of Yevam. But other than that, obviously, when the Torah tells us, for example, okshautim lo'oysar yadecha, b'hoyu l'tishalkes ben enecha, it's not meant metaphorically. There were the karoyim and then tzedukim and whatever held, and then various other groups held that kind of thing as metaphorical. It means that the Torah should be as dear to you as if it was on your heart and on your head. We know that's not so, of course. We know there's an actual mitzvah to put on tefillin, and the same way with all the other mitzvahs. He knew that. He knew by the same token that Rashba has some very sharp words in one of his shuvahs, and in more than one of his shuvahs, actually. In his times, there were people who were coming up with the notion that all the stories in the Torah are metaphorical. So now there is an idea. The Zoya mentioned that they do have a deeper meaning, of course, and they do have as well a metaphorical meaning. For example, let's say Avraham and Sarah represent the neshama and the guf, respectively. Fine, but there were people in the Rashba's time who were taking that the wrong way and saying that it only has that meaning, that there was no historical Avraham and Sarah, there were no actual physical people like that. It just represents the spiritual and philosophical concept. The Rashba wrote very sharply against that. So obviously, Rav Kahana knew that when it comes to such things, then obviously the pasuk has its simple meaning. But he thought, at least when it comes to the poetic parts of Torah and things like that, not necessarily is the pshat the main thing. Maybe the pshat is just there as a vehicle for it, but not that it has any meaning of its own outside of the nimshal. And now he knows that it's not so, that even a pasuk like this, Chazor Chabach al Yorech Giber, that this pasuk about a soldier strapping on a sword, even though the real meaning of it is the metaphorical meaning that it refers to Divrei Torah, nevertheless the pshat of it has has, nevertheless, the fact of it is meaningful as well, and the fact that the pasuk chose, the fact that Bnei Korach, who wrote that capital, chose the metaphor of a sword for Torah, shows that the coincidence of Eliezer, at least, that a sword has beauty to it.
Isn't describing Torah only as allegorical some sort of clearer?
That's what I was just saying. That's what I'm just saying, that the Rashba strongly argued against. But in other words, there's three different things. There is the mitzvahs in the Torah. Obviously, to say that those are metaphorical only is clearer. There's the narratives in the Torah, when the Torah tells us that Hashem created the world in 6 days, and that there was a chetes hadas, and there was a marble, and there was a this and that and the other. Yeah, all of those. Well, not all of those, actually. The truth is, there are some of those also where Rishonim hold that at least some of those are metaphorical. For example, the whole part of in Bereshit over there, when the snake talks with Chava, the Rambam learns in Moreh Nevuchim that that and a number of other things like that in the Torah are metaphorical. There wasn't actually a talking snake. Fine, but at least, for example, when the pasuk tells us, let's say that there was an Abraham and a Sarah, and Hashem tells Abraham at 75, leave Haran and go to the land which I'll show you, and he and Sarah have this and this and this happen to them, all of that obviously happened literally, and the Rashba strongly writes against people who thought that it's only metaphorical, and he says that is completely against Torah. But again, we're talking about over here. Then you have a third part of Torah, which is the poetry, the allegory, and whatever. So let's say, for example, Tilim, Shir Hashirim, et cetera, Kahana was under the impression. Let's take for example Shir Hashirim. The whole Shir Hashirim is written in the form of a dialogue between a woman and a man, a couple of shepherds, whatever, Shloima, whatever. So Rav Kahana. Now we know that it represents the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. We know that it represents the relationship of Hashem and the Neshama, et cetera. So Rav Kahana took the view. Let's say that okay. So then in that case, okay. When Shloima wrote Shir Hashirim, He needed some kind of metaphorical form to put it into. So he put it in this form of a man and a woman talking to each other and talking how much they love each other and how much they miss each other and what happens when they're separated, etc. But not that has any independent meaning of its own. Only the deeper meaning is what's important. And now he knows, the fact that Shlomo chose to write it in that way, the fact that Bnei Korach chose to write it in this way, shows that itself, that level of meaning itself, has a certain meaning as well, and we have to pay attention to that. So
who said the Torah is only allegorical?
I'm saying in the Rashba's times, you had people who thought that way. You had a whole philosophical movement that started in the Rashba's times. They based themselves on certain things that the Rambam says and certain things that the Zohar says and whatever, and they made a whole challenge out of it and said that everything in the Torah is metaphorical and allegorical. And then the Rashba argues on that. So that's what we're saying. So Rav Kahana obviously didn't think that way, but he thought at least as far as the parts of the Torah that clearly are meant as allegories, for example, Shir Hashirim, and for example, this Pasuk in Tehillim, he thought that the chat has no particular validity. You don't have to pay attention to it. And now he's finding out that no, it does. Okay, so the Gemara says, my Kamash Malon, what does Rav Kahana want to inform us by that, by telling us that by 18 already he knew the entire Talmud, and now he first found out this fact? The Ligma Inish Vahadra Lisper, a person should first focus as much as possible on learning from his Rebbe, even if he doesn't understand everything, and later on he'll go and analyze and delve in and figure out the reasons behind what he learned. So in this case, in other words, Rav Kahana is doing that. He didn't know this concept of Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshutei. He knew that what we say over here in the Gemara, that Rabbi Eliezer's reason is based on the pasuk Chagor Chayavcha, but he didn't know at that point. He didn't know how that fits with the idea that pasuk refers to Divrei Torah. So now he found out something new, but all this time he had been learning, even though he didn't know that deeper underlying concept. But a person should do that. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, so now Simon Zorus. We have a Simon for the next statements that we're going to say over here. Zorus, the Zion stands for Rabbi Elazar, the Resh stands for Resh Lakish, and the Vav Sof stands for Zit Talmidehem, and their Talmidim, because we're going to quote various things from them. the Ben Yehoyada and a previous state before Bam Maseach or David from a David Tardo has a long discussion about what on earth this this simon means. But okay, anyway, Amud of Yirmi they also mentioned the possibility that maybe what we're doing is because we're going to take certain words in the psukim and darshan them completely different than their simple meaning, and therefore it's like zoros of a strange thing. Okay. Anyway, Amr of Yimi, Amr of Elazar. Again, we're going to quote the next pasuk in Tilum over there, the next pasuk after this one, Chagur Chavacha, and Darshan it. Shnei Tamar Chachamim Hamachadvin Zelazeh B'Halacha. Two Tamar Chachamim who sharpen each other in Halacha. They ask kashas to each other and answer them. And so and Rashi says, Loi L'Kapeach, they're not asking them in order like to chop them off, like to show, look, ha, I'm right and you're wrong. But they're doing it for the proper reason. They're doing it in order to sharpen each other. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzliach Lehem, then Hashem makes them successful, and now they're able to learn Torah much better and understand it much better. Shenema, the next passage continues in Chilim, Bahadorcha Tzlach, and your glory be successful. Al Tikri, Bahadorcha Ela Bahadorcha. Don't read the pasuk as if it said Bahadorcha and your glory, but read it as if it said Bahadorcha and your sharpness, because a hey and a ches easily interchange. They're shaped similarly and they sound similar. A dalet and a resh look similar, so they can also be darshan interchangeably. And Marsha points out the reason why the Gemara sees to darshan it that way is because the previous pasuk ends with the word Bahadorcha. Therefore, why is the next pasuk also beginning with the word Bahadorcha? Therefore, it must be for a drasha. So therefore, Bahadorcha, so if they sharpen, your sharpening, Tzlach, will be successful. And not only that, they go up and become great and powerful people. Shenema, Tzlach Rechav, as the pasuk continues, be successful and wide. And riding, and then whenever we find it, a lot of times in the Torah, we find when somebody is riding on a chariot or whatever it shows, for example, Yosef is one example, then it shows that now they attained greatness. They attained great power. Yachol afilu shaloi lishma. You would think that applies even if they're not learning lishma. If they're learning, let's say, for example, because they want to be called a Talmid Chacham or whatever. No, Talmid Baima al Dvar Emes. Therefore, the passage continues on a word of truth. So it only works. This concept only works when they're learning for the purpose of reaching the truth of the Torah. Yachol in Hegis Daitoy, you would think maybe also that they're entitled to these brachas even if they're proud of what, even if they act proud of what they're of what they're doing. I learned Torah, therefore look at me, I'm a great Talmud Chacham. No, Talmud Lang of Anva Tzedek. Therefore, the same pasuk continues, and humility of righteousness. So only if he's humble, only then is the Torah going to have a good effect on him. As we know, the famous thing, why is the Torah compared to water? Because water flows from a high place to a low place, and the same way Torah doesn't stay by a person who's proud and gaivadik. The Im Oisin Kane, and the Gemara finishes off. If these people do that and they learn Torah with that kind of mentality, they're learning Torah lishma and they're learning it with humility. Zos on the Torah shenitna miyamin. They will have the schus of achieving the Torah which was given from the right hand of Hashem. Meaning, Marsha says, not only they'll be able to learn Torah, but they'll be able to teach and paskin for other people. Shenema, as the pasuk says, the pasuk finishes off, v'sorcha neiraot yiminecha, and it will teach you, it will guide you with the awesome things of your right hand. So the Torah Tavyachol was given by Hashem's right hand, because you know the Torah is the ultimate expression of Hashem's chesed, and chesed is the right. So therefore, that makes that now you're able to teach and you're able to pass. And if you learn Torah lishma and with humility, so that's how we douch in that whole pasuk v'hadorcha tzlach. Okay. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says a different meaning of the word b'sorcha neirois yiminecha. It means zoichan the dvarim shenemru b'mina shal Torah. It means that if they learn in that way, they're going to be zoichan to the brachas that are associated with the right side of the Torah. The Omer Rav Barav Shila v'amil Omer of Yosef v'chama Omer of Sheches. My dichtiv orich yom b'mina V'smoila oshav chobed. What does it mean? The pasuk we say it whenever we lift up the Torah, that the length of days is in its right hand, and its left hand is riches and honor. So what does that mean? Ela b'mina orach yamim ikka oshav chobed lecha. So what does that mean? On the right hand, there's only length of days. There's no osha and chobed. Why? If you get the greater bracha from the right side of the Torah, surely you should get the lesser bracha as well. So what it means is ela l'mayminin ba, to people who learn Torah on the right side, which we'll say in a second what that means. It means orach yamim ikka, they have length of days, v'chol shekein oshav chobed, and all the more so. They get riches and covered, and then honor. Well, masne ilimba, people who go to the left with the Torah, oshav covered, ifka orach yamin lecha, they may have the oshav covered, but they're not going to have the orach yamin. So what is my minin and masne ilim? So Rashi has two explanations. One is my minin ba means they work hard on understanding the actual meaning of the Torah, as opposed to masne ilim ba means like they don't bother as much. They don't delve as deeply into it. So it's like my minin ba would mean like when a person does work with their right hand, most people are righties and their right hand is the stronger one and the one you can do more effective work with it. So that would be one meaning of my minin masne ilim. Rashi says another explanation of Maiminim and Masmelim. Maiminim is people who learn Torah Lashma, and Masmelim is people who learn Torah Shalom Lashma. Masha points out that in that connection, yeah, you have a Gemara elsewhere in Yuma that mentions that if a person learns Torah Lashma, then it becomes Sam Chaim, and if not, then it becomes the opposite. So that fits with what we're saying here in the Gemara, that if he's Maiminim, if he's learning Lashma, then he gets Orech Yom, and if not, then he may get other brachas, but not Orech Yom. So anyway, so the point is, Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying, so that's another meaning of the Sorchon Eroes Yiminecha. It doesn't just refer to the fact that the Torah as a whole was given, so to speak, from Hashem's right hand. It also means that these two Talmid Chachamim, rather, who work to sharpen each other in learning by asking questions and answering them, will end up having the bracha that's associated with the Torah's right side, the bracha of Arichos Yamim, as well as Osher Rekavim. Another thing, Amr of Yirmiya, Amr of Shimon Lakish, Shnei Tamar Chachamim HaNoichin Zelazem HaHalacha. Now here's another level of Tamar Chachamim, where the previously we talked about Mechadidin, where they sharpen each other in Halacha. Now we're talking about Shnoichin HaNoichin Zelazem HaHalacha, which means, again, two explanations, Rashi says. One is that they do it B'nachas Ruach, they do it gently, they talk, not like the previous one necessarily, where they're mechadid and they're asking questions and trying to sharpening each other. Here they're learning Torah together gently in order to learn from each other. And Rashi says a second explanation of hanoichin means that they lead each other to the proper understanding. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu makshiv lahem, so Hashem pays attention and listens to what they're saying. As the pasuk says, then those who feared Hashem spoke to each other, and the pasuk continues, "Vayakshiv Hashem ayishma Hashem." Hashem listened and paid attention. So, what does it mean? "Oz nidbur yirei Hashem ein gibur elam nachas." The word "gibur" means going gently. Shenema yadber amin tachteinu. As the pasuk says, he will subjugate the nations underneath us. So we see, in other words, that the word Yadber means subjugated, means like talking with each other in a way where one is subject to the other. If we say the second explanation that Noichin Zelazeh means they guide each other, then Rashi points out that also Yadber Amin Tachtenu can also mean he will guide the nations underneath us. Actually, in the back of the Gemara, one of the Mefarshim, Rabbi Elazar Meir Horovitz, points out that the word dibur actually means talking strongly. But here it's a different grammatical form. Nifal. So the one who's leading may be harsh. That's why giver is a harsh lashon. But the one who is being led is being led along. He goes gently. So therefore we see over here that it can be referring to something gentle, or to leading him. Okay. My Ulachoshve Shmoy, so the Gemara digresses a second. We mentioned that we quoted the beginning of the Pasuk, Oz Nidbur Yir Hashem. The end of the Pasuk is, Vaykosev Sefer Zikar in the Fon of the Yir Hashem Ulachoshve Shmoy. This, by the way, this is in last week's Pirkei Avos, of course, that we said that if people are sitting together and learning Torah, then Hashem pays attention to them and then writes them down in the Sefer Zikar. So the Pasuk finishes off, Yir Hashem Ulachoshve Shmoy, for those who fear Hashem and for those who think of his name. So my Ulachoshve Shmoy, what is that last part, L'choshve Shmoy, those who think of Hashem's name, what is that adding? This we learned early in Brachos. Amar Abami, Afilu Chishet, Lashes Mitzvah, even if a person thought to do a mitzvah, the Nena, Soloy Asa, but then there was an onus and he couldn't do it. Ma'alala because of Kila Asa, and the Apostle considers it as if he did it. That's L'choshve Shmoy, that he thought to do something in Hashem's name and he wasn't able to. Okay. Amar of Chinen Aba'idi, more in this connection, Rav Chinen Aba'idi says, "Kol oisa mitzvah k'ma'amara," a person who does a mitzvah as it was said, which one meaning of as it was said, Marshal says it means he does it l'shma. The Maharal says he does it to perfection. He does the mitzvah absolutely perfectly. Anyway, ein mevastrin oisa b'surah yours. Such a person will not be given bad news. The Apostle says somebody who guards the mitzvah, so he does it l'shma, he does it as perfectly as possible, he won't know of anything bad. So that's the point. It's not just that he does the mitzvah, he keeps the mitzvah by doing it to perfection. And Ben Yehoyada says, by the way, the expression that ein mevastrin oisa b'surah yours means that even if it turns out that the b'surah yours were wrong, even if it turns out it's fake news, such a person won't have to deal with such things either, even though it turns out there was nothing actually wrong going on. Amr of Asi, the Tamer of Chanina, such a person, Afilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, goes of Zera, whom of Atla. Such a person has another advantage. Even if Hashem makes a Zera, such a person, that's Oysa Mitzvah Kamamara, that he does the Mitzvah Lishma, or to perfection, is able to be Mavasal that Zera. Because the previous pasuk in Tehillos, before Shema Mitzvah, the previous pasuk goes Ba'asher Dvar Melech Shelton, because the word of Hashem rules over everything, or wherever the word of Hashem goes, there's rulership, and of course Hashem's word goes everywhere. Umi Yom Aloy Matasseh, and who could tell Hashem what are you doing? Like who can object to what Hashem is doing? Or Snichla Shema Mitzvah Yedavara. And the next pasuk continues: the one who guards the mitzvah won't know anything bad. In other words, the point is that the pasuk is rhetorically asking if Hashem wants to do something, who can stop him? And the answer is the Shema Mitzvah can stop Hashem because Hashem will be mevasal his gzera in the schus of such a person. Going back to the Tamar Chachamim, so far we had two different levels among the Tamar Chachamim. We had the ones who are Mechadidin, we have the ones who sharpen one another in Halacha. Then we have the ones that are Neuchin Zelazer, who are gentle to each other, that they gently lead one another to find the right way. So now we have a third one. Amr of Abba, Amr of Shimon Makish. Shnei Tamar Chachamim Hamakshivim Zelazem HaHalacha. Two Tamar Chachamim who listen and pay attention to each other in Halacha, meaning so they're teaching each other and each one understanding from the other one something that he didn't know before. So such people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shemei Ala Koylam. Such people, Hashem listens to their voice. Shinema, as the prophet says, Hayesheves Baganim, the end of Shir Shirim, the one who sits in the gardens representing the Beit Medrash, the colleagues, the Tamar Chachamim, Makshivim, who are paying attention to each other, Makshivim, Lakoyle Hashmi'ini, make me hear your voice. So in other words, Hashem says, when you Jewish people are sitting as Chaverim and learning Torah and listening to each other and learning from each other, then I say, then I'm saying, L'koy l'chashmi'ini, make me hear your voice. In other words, I will accept your tefillah. The Ein Oisin Kain, if they don't do that, Gurman l'shchina shemistalakas me'Yisrael, then they actually cause the Shechina to go away from the Jewish people, Shenema, because the next pasuk, the last pasuk of Shir HaShirim, continues, Brach dodi udmei l'cha, run away, my beloved, and you'll be like a deer running away on the mountain. So in other words, it's implying that It's implying that if they don't do what they're supposed to, as far as Makshid and Zelazeh, then just the opposite. Hashem, so to speak, runs away and says, I don't want anything to do with them. And a fourth one, Omer of Abba, Omer of Shimon Malka, Shnei Tamar HaChamim Hamad Gilin Zelazeh Halacha. Then you have two Tamar HaChamim who gather together for Halacha. So they say, in other words, Rashi says, we don't have any Rebbe to teach us. Therefore, let's the two of us, let's the bunch of us join together and learn between us, because we don't have any Rebbe to teach us. So such people are Kadosh Baruch Hu Oyavan, Hashem loves them. Another pasuk in Shashirim, his dego, or dego means gathering together, like you have the Degolim of the Jewish people in the desert, is beloved to me. By the way, there's a Tosfos in Avodah Zarah and also an Aruch who has a different explanation of Hamad Gilin. They explain that the word dego can come from a word that means to falsify. So it means these two Tamar HaChamim are sort of falsifying each other. Each one is saying, you're not understanding it correctly. You're not understanding it correctly. I have a better explanation. So still, even though you would think, I mean, it sounds like they're putting each other down. Your explanation is incorrect. But Hashem appreciates that they're doing it in order to get down, that they're doing it in order to get down to the truth. Obviously, they're not doing it in a way to put each other down and say that you're a no good Nick or whatever, but they're disagreeing with the other one's premise or the other one's conclusion or whatever. So Hashem loves such a thing. This is only, though, if these people are familiar with the basic form of the Shmur. In other words, they've learned previously, they've learned the relevant topic previously from their Rebbe, and they understand that Lisa actually says Shodesh Hadavar, they understand the root of the matter. So now they're dealing with trying to figure out the details. So then Hashem loves it. But if they haven't learned it before, then no. Then they're gonna come to completely wrong conclusions. So then it's not necessarily so good. So four different levels among Tamar Chachamim who learn with one another, where they sharpen one another, where they're gentle with one or lead one another, where they listen to one another, and where they are Magilim, where they gather each other together or they refute each other. So those are four different levels of Tamar Chachamim learning together. The Omer of Abba, Omer of Shimon Lakish. Godel Hamalva, since we mentioned things that Rav Abba said in the name of Rish Lakish, we mentioned this last one was these last two about the Tzadranachom HaMakshivim and the Han Gilim. But now more things that he said, which don't directly have to do with Tzadran HaChamim. The Omer of Abba, it's really supposed to be the Omer of Abba, Omer of Shimon Lakish, Godel Hamalva Yosim and Oisa Tzedakah. A person who lends money to a poor person is greater than a person who does tzedakah with him. Because tzedakah, an oni, may be embarrassed to accept. Alone, he's less likely to be embarrassed about. In fact, the Rambam, when the Rambam lists the eight levels of tzedakah, the highest level he mentions is giving a person a loan or helping him find a job or whatever. And when you're giving him money to invest, where like he's going to be running the business, and you're going to be the investor, and you're going to get profits from it. God is Yosef Mikulon is greater than all of them, because alone you may have that there's only so much a person is going to be willing to borrow because he knows he has to pay it back eventually. As opposed to when you give him an investment, he's more likely to be willing to take a larger investment because after all he's going to be working the business and then making money from it. So that's the best thing of all. The Omer of Abba, Omer of Shimon Lakish, another thing of Abba says in the name of Shimon Lakish, Im Tamad Chacham Noikim V'Noiter K'Nochashu, if you have a Tamad Chacham who does Nekima and Netira, he takes revenge and he bears a grudge, like a snake. Nevertheless, Chogrehu Al Mosnecha, tie him around your waist. In other words, if you have a Tamad Chacham who is easily offended and then wants to get back at people who insulted him or whatever, nevertheless, keep him close to you. Still, stick around. Don't say, well, that kind of person I don't want to learn for. Nevertheless, Rashi says, he dubbeth boy. Stick close to him. You will end up being able to enjoy something from his learning. Now, true, it says in Pirkei Avos, Lo Yakaf Ben Melamed, so the point is, in other words, he's not going to have an easier time learning Torah, but so on his side, he should be working to change that, but you, the Talmud, should still try to stick with such a person because you're going to end up gaining something from him. There is a concept. The Gemara in Yuma that mentions this idea that Talmud Chacham has to be noikim benoiter kanachosh, but it doesn't mean on his personal matters. It means on divrei Torah. It means when it comes to something that involves the honor of the Torah, then he's noikim benoiter kanachosh. But nowadays, of course, how many people can really say if they do that they're doing it for those right reasons, that they're doing it because of covet of Torah rather than covet of themselves? So it's obviously something that a person has to take with great care. But if in fact he is doing it for the proper reasons, then you should keep him close, even though he's like a snake, and of course you'd be afraid to have a snake anywhere near you, especially around your waist. But nevertheless, don't worry and be close to him. And the other way around, imam aretzu. But if you have somebody who's an amaretz chosid, even though he seems to be a chosid, al todor b'shchonosay, don't even live in his neighborhood because he can't really be a chosid. You're going to end up learning the wrong things. It doesn't take care of it. Why am I aretz chosid? Another thing, now from somebody else in the name of Rish Lakish, Omer of Kahana, Omer of Shimon Lakish, Va'amila Omer of Asi, Omer of Shlakish, or Shimon Lakish, it says on the side, Va'amila Omer of Abba, Omer of Shimon Lakish, a third version is it was Rav Abba, which is maybe why the Gemara is bringing it over here, because according to the third version, it is the same Rav Abba as before. Anyway, another statement from Rish Lakish, Kol HaMagad of Kelev Rab Seich Beisai, a person who raises a bad dog in his household, and by bad we mean a dangerous dog, Moneya Chesed Miteich Beisai, he prevents Chesed from being in his house. In other words, because what happens is, Rashi says, because the Aniyim are afraid to come to his door because they're afraid of the dog, so it prevents him from doing Chesed. Shenema, as the Pasuk says in Iyov, Lamos Mere'ehu Chesed, the one who prevents Chesed from his friend. So the simple meaning of the pasuk lamos means he prevents. But the Gemara Darshan Shekain Baloshin Yevonis Koyin Lachel of Lamos. In Greek, the word for a dog is lamos. So therefore, the pasuk is saying lamos, the person who has a dog, Mere Ehu Chesed. He's preventing from his friend. The mem Mere Ehu means from. So it means he's preventing Chesed from going to his friend. So therefore, he's doing wrong by having that dog. Marshall explains that actually if the dog is actually dangerous and actually bites, then you have a different reason that it's also anyway. You have a Gemara in Baba Kama says, you're not allowed to have something dangerous in your house that could hurt people. So here we're talking about even if it's not actually dangerous, but it barks in a frightening way, and people therefore are afraid that it is a dangerous dog and they're going to stay away. So our Gemara is saying, okay, in a matter of loisotin domin vesecha, you're not over on that because the fact is it's not dangerous, but nevertheless, you're keeping away the aniyim, and therefore that's wrong. Rav Nachman Kokama asked personally, Yiras Shemayim, Rav Nachman says such a person who raises such a dog is also keeping from himself Yiras Shemayim, and acting in a way that shows that he doesn't have Yiras Shemayim, Shinema, because that same pasuk in Iyev continues, the Yiras Shaka Yazav, he abandons the fear of Hashem. So meaning, in other words, Marshall says, if he really trusted in Hashem, he would rely on the fact that the mezuzah, that the name of Hashem on the mezuzah protects him. Instead, he feels that I need a dog at the door of my house to protect me. So therefore, it's like he's showing that he doesn't have true Yiras Hashem. So in this connection, the Gemara mentioned, Hahi Iksa the Ailasra who baked the Lameifa, a certain woman once went into a house in order to bake. So the Balabas had lent her his oven, so she goes in there to make her dough and bake it. Nobach Bakalba, when she was going into the house, or when she was in the house or whatever, the owner's dog barked at her. She was pregnant. It's after Vlada, her baby moved out of its place, meaning she started miscarrying. Amala Mori Debesa, so the master of the house says to her, Loi Tidchali, don't worry about that dog, don't be afraid of it. It can't hurt you. Dishtile Nive Shtilin Tufre, its teeth have been removed. In particular, Rashi says it's canine teeth that it uses to bite with, and its claws have been removed, so it can't hurt you.
Omrele, and the woman said to him, Shkula tibusach, l'shadi achizri, you might as well take your goodness, you might as well take your favor, and throw it on the thorns. In other words, it's worthless. Kvar not vlad, the baby already moved, and I already miscarried. So you see that even if the dog is just barking dangerously, it's still also to have it around because it may make a woman miscarry. But the same thing. The same thing we're saying, that it can also cause that the aniyim are going to be afraid to come. In general, throughout Jewish history, it was not very common for Jews to raise dogs. Nowadays, you have people who have dogs as pets. How that's allowed, based on the halachas over here, is not so simple. There is Gemara in Bava Kamma that mentions that if you really need it for protection, then you're allowed to have it as long as you keep it chained up during the day. So there are details in it. I think I've once quoted before an expression from the famous writer Shalom Aleichem, the famous Yiddishist writer, the famous Maskilish writer Shalom Aleichem, that he says if you see a Jew has a dog, either the Jew is not much of a Jew or the dog is not much of a dog. Okay. Anyway, Amar Rav Huna, my dichtiv. What does it mean? A pasuk from Kehelis. Smach bochu b'yaldusecha, be happy, young man, in your youth. Your heart should be good for you in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and what your eyes see. And know that for all of this, Hashem will judge you. So what does that mean? The pasuk seems to say, what is the pasuk talking about? It sounds like the beginning of the pasuk is saying, go ahead, have fun, do whatever you want. And then it's saying, but know that Hashem is going to be judging you for it. So what is it? Is Shlomo telling you to go ahead and then take it easy and do whatever you want? Or is he telling you, what's going on over here? So he says, it's two different parts of the pasuk. Ad kan, divrei yetzahara, mikan ve'elach divrei yetzahara. The first half of the pasuk, Shlomo is telling you what the yetzahara would tell you. Take it easy, do whatever you want, be happy as long as you enjoy it, etc., etc. Mikan ve'elach divrei yetzahara. Then the second half of the pasuk, the dak, yachal eli, yiviyachal, l'kim ha'mishpat. Know that Hashem is going to judge you for everything you did. That's the yetzahara warning you, don't listen to the yetzahara. Don't listen to the yetzahara's advice. Be aware that if you do that, then you're going to be called to account. Rish Lakish, Rish Lakish has a different explanation. Ad kan the divrei Torah. The first half of the pasuk is not talking about doing whatever you want. It's talking about that when it comes to learning Torah, you should be happy, learn with simcha, learn with tov levav, go in the ways of your heart, meaning that according to the way you see it, you should understand it. Mikan ve'elach v'maisim tovim, and the second half of the pasuk is about maisim tovim. Be careful that whatever you learned, you're also going to be held to account. If you only learned and you didn't do mitzvahs, then you're going to be held to account that you knew the right and the wrong thing to do, and you didn't do it. So be careful about that. Okay, so that's the end of the Agadah. So now getting back to the Mishnah, we said biris tahora. We said a biris, which we said was a garter, is tahor, is not makabel truma. So what is a biris? I'm going to be heard a biris zuas oda. So Rabbi Yehuda says a biris means a bracelet. And I says, what do you mean? Masid Rabbi Yehuda. What do you mean a bracelet is not makabel truma? Biris tahora of Yosef Baba Shabbos. We said in the Mishnah that the biris is not makabel truma, and you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. The ilu es odas mei. Now, what do you mean? A bracelet is makabel truma. Where do you see that a bracelet is makabel truma? Rashi says because we have after the war of Midian in Parshas Matos, which is where we learn many of the dinim of the halachas of what can and can't become tameh. So the pasuk mentions that they captured various kinds of jewelry and they donated them to the Mishkan. And one type of jewelry that it mentions is a bracelet. Earlier, the pasuk mentions that everything you captured has to be cleansed of tahara, has to be cleansed of tumah, so it has to be sprinkled with paradum water because it was in contact with mesim, and it has to be toivled in a mikveh, etc. So you see, therefore, that a bracelet is able to be mekabel tumah. Tosfos learns a little differently. Tosfos learns because it mentions the bracelets, and then it also says, and then it calls them kli meiser. It calls them a keli that has a function. So therefore, it's considered a keli. So a bracelet is makabel truma. So what do you mean that a biris is a bracelet, and why is it not makabel truma? The answer is hachi kama. You're right. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't mean that a biris is a bracelet. What he means is biris tachas es oda imedes. He means that a biris is put on the leg in the same place where a bracelet would be put on the arm. But on the leg, the purpose of it is in order to hold up her socks. So therefore, so it's not makabel truma. You're not wearing it as an ornament. You're not wearing it as something directly serving your body either, because it actually serves the socks, which in turn serve your body. So the thing is not makabel truma. Rashi explains, it's like we learned previously, for example, in the previous paragraph, we talked about rings that are attached to kelim, where the ring is not makabel truma because it serves the keli, which in turn serves the person. There's no problem wearing it on Shabbos, again, because she's not going to take it off. She's not going to take it off and expose her legs by having her socks fall off. That's the point of Rashi. Tosfos learns that the point is she's not going to take it off because it's not attached. The Tosfos learns, based on what the Gemara is going to say in a second, that a biris you only wear on one leg, and if she only has one, she's not going to take it off and show it off, because Adrabba, it's embarrassing. What do you mean you only have one? You're supposed to have two. Okay. So, the Gemara tells, Yosef, Rav, and Rav Huna kamed Rav Yemia. Rav and Rav Huna were sitting as Talmidim in front of Rav Yemia. The Yosef, Rav Yemia become a namnim. Rav Yemia was dozing. The Yosef Robin, the Kama, so Robin, one of the Talmidim, was sitting and saying the difference between a Bira, and we said in the Mishnah also Kvalim, we said that Kvalim are Makabel Truma, and you're not allowed to wear them on Shabbos, so what's the difference? So he says the difference is Bira, Biris Ba'achas, Biris Ba'achas Kvalim B'Shtayim. A Biris is worn on one leg, Kvalim means that it's worn on both legs. Amalei Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says that's not what it means. Both biris or kvalim are worn on both legs. What it is people put a chain going from one biris to the other, and that makes them kvalim. In other words, if you're wearing them without the chain, then each one by itself is called a biris. If you have a chain connecting them, and we'll see soon in the Gemara why you would wear a chain between your garters, then it's considered then it's called kvalim. And the kvalim are makabel truma, and you can't wear them on Shabbos. By the way, this is that the Gemara mentions that Rav Yemia was dozing. There's an explanation on it that the Gemara mentions it's not the only place of the year. In a lot of places, the Gemara mentions such a thing. The point is that these Chachamim were so involved in Torah and so dedicated to teaching Torah that even when they were tired, they would still be teaching, even if like they might have to take a quick nap in the middle for a couple of minutes in order to have the strength to continue, but then they would continue as soon as possible. So they wouldn't say, I'm tired, let's just end for the day. They would still be sitting there and teaching as much as possible. Anyway, so again, Robin is saying that a biris is worn on one leg and kvalim, that the definition of kvalim is when you're wearing it on both legs. And Rav tells him that, no, actually, the definition of kvalim is when you have a chain attaching them. So again, Tosfos says that's the difference. According to Robin, if we're saying that kvalim, that a biris is only on one leg, that's why you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos, because not like Rashi says, because those socks will fall down, but because a person would be embarrassed. What do you mean? You're going to take off your one biris and show it off, or friends are going to laugh at her. What do you mean? You only have one biris. You're supposed to have two. Okay. So the question is, So what are you telling me? The chain that attaches them makes it be considered a keli? Why just because of the chain? Why would that be considered a keli? And now it's makabel truma. What's the logic? The chitema kid of Shmuel ben Achmeni. You're going to say maybe the reason why it does is based on what Shmuel ben Achmeni says, which we learned a few dafim ago. The Amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr of Yechanan, minayin l'mashmiya kol b'klay machas yutame. How do we know that a metal keli that makes a noise like a bell we said over there is makabel truma? Shenema called dover ashiyava beish. Again, in the story with Midian, it says over there any matter, any word that comes into fire has to be kashed with fire or with water, etc. And the word dover means a filu dibur mashma, means even a talking keli. So for example, a bell is makabel truma. So you're going to say that the chain is makabel truma because it jangles when you walk. What do you mean? The shlema hosam kabola the color. Over there, you need the bell to make a noise. You want it to make a noise so you know where the animal is or you know where the baby is or whatever, and the carbon mitzvah. So it's actually serving a function. The bell is doing that. Hocha, my mitzvah carbon. Over here, what's the function? Okay, the chain jingles when you walk. So what do you need the jingling for? How does that help you? The answer is Hochanami Ka'ovid Maise. Here, actually, the answer is that the chain actually has a functional purpose. It's not just a decoration.
There
was a certain family in Yerushalayim. They used to take very large steps. So what happened was the girls in this family, their bitzulim would fall off. And therefore, that makes it more difficult when they want to get married because a man wants to marry a bitzulah. So also lahen kvalim, so their families made for them, or they themselves made for themselves chains. The tilu shal shelas bein, they made for themselves kvalim, the garters. The tilu shal shelas bein, they put a chain between the two garters. Shalo yupse sam gasses. This way they're forced to take smaller steps. Now it doesn't have to be. It's not going to be the smaller steps, the little mincing steps that we said yesterday in the Gemara that the Bnei Yerushalayim did, which the Navi criticized them for. We're talking about normal size steps. This way their steps are not so large. Below here, so let's say no sure, and their bitzulim would not fall out. So the chain is actually serving the person directly. It's not like we thought that it's not like the garter, which is serving to hold up the socks, and the socks in turn are serving the person. Here it's actually it's actually serving the person themselves by preventing their bitzulim from falling off. The Meiri actually has a different other explanation, an interesting explanation, which is not that they took wide steps, but they used to take very heavy steps. So what happened was, when they would put on this chain, the jingling of it, if it jingled, then they'd realize that I'm taking my steps, they're too heavy. I got to lighten up my steps. So then that way the chain won't jingle, and therefore the same way would keep their shoulders from falling off. Itar Bahu Rav Yirmiya, when they were having this discussion, Rav Yirmiya woke up from his nap, and heard this explanation of Rav Huna's. He woke up, and he says to them, Yishar, well said, and that's what Rav Yechanan said, that's what the kvalim are. So a biris, again, is a garter, whether it's worn on one leg or on two, and kvalim is when you have them attached with a chain for the reason that these girls did. Since we're talking about things being the Kabbal Truma. So let's talk about another thing. Again, as we've mentioned before, the Gemara, whenever the Gemara has an opportunity to talk about Hilchos Truma V'Tara, it does that because we don't have a Gemara on most of the state of Taras, so therefore the Gemara has to swap them in various other places. So he also Rav Gimi Amar Rav Yechanan, when Rav Gimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said in the name of Rav Yechanan, Minayim La'orig Kol Shehu Tameh, how do we know that a woven piece of cloth, no matter how small it is the Kabbal Truma? Now, earlier in the Masechta, in the second parak, we talked about that a piece of cloth has to have a minimum size to be the Kabbal Truma. 3x3 etzbaos if it's made out of wool or linen, 3x3 tefachim if it's made out of other materials. But there we're talking about where you have a piece of cloth that was, for example, that was torn off or that was cut off of a larger piece. Here we're talking about, to begin with, a piece of cloth was woven small, let's say to use as a small belt or something, so it's very narrow. So nevertheless, so because you made it to begin with to be a functional thing, a functional beged by itself, therefore we're saying it's mekabel tum. So how do we know that, says Rav Gimi? It's tzitz. We learn that from the Kohen Gadol's tzitz. The tzitz, as we're going to say soon, is only 2 etzbaos wide, so it's not 3x3 etzbaos, and we still see that it's mekabel tum. We see that it's important enough to be considered a beged, and therefore if it's considered a beged, it's makabel truma. So the same thing would be with something woven. Amalei Abaya said, Abaya says, Rav Gimi, what are you talking about? The tzitz arugu. You say, what do you mean? The tzitz is not something woven. But Tanya, we learn in a braita, tzitz kemin kastrol zahav. The tzitz was like a golden plate. The roichav shtei etzbaos with 2 etzbaos wide. Umukas ma'ozen la'ozen. It went from one ear of the Kohen Gadol to the other, so it went on his forehead from one ear to the other. But it was made so far. In other words, we see it was made out of a metal plate. But okay, we're finishing up quoting the Braisa, so we see it was a metal plate. It wasn't woven. The cost of all of the shnei shittin. Now we know the pasuk says it had to stand at kodesh l'Hashem. So the words kodesh l'Hashem were written on it in two lines: yud kei lamata, but kodesh lamed lamata. On the top it said the name Yudke Vavke, and on the bottom it said Kodesh and the letter Lamed. Now, why is that? The reason is because it's not respectful to have something else before Hashem's name. Now, obviously, in the Torah, we have in many places where we have words before Hashem's name, but fine, you also have words after it, so it's not. But here, where you only have the two words, Kodesh or Hashem, on there, it wouldn't be respectful to have something else before the name Hashem. So therefore, so you actually have a few different explanations of Rishonim how exactly it was arranged. Rashi over here says that it means literally that the word Yudke Vavke was right above the Kodesh and the Lamed. Tosfos over here says that no, because the fact of the matter is you have to be able to read it in order. You have to be able to read Kodesh Lashem. If you have it written in that way, it's going to read Hashem Kodesh Lish, and that's not right. So therefore, Tosfos says that actually what it means is that you had Yudke Vavke was at the end of the first line, and Kodesh La was at the beginning of the second line. So you have, if you're looking at it head on, you can read from right to left, Kodesh La, and then your eye looks upward and you see the La, then you see the word Hashem. And then you have the Shonim who have yet another, you have Rabbi Tam in Sefer HaYosher and a number of other Rishonim that bring a different way of doing it, that they would write Kodesh La at the end of the first line and the word Yudke Vavke at the beginning of the second line. So it's as if you're starting to read from the middle of the first line and then continuing on to the second line. Anyway, so that's how it was written. The Omer of Elazar Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi says, I disagree. It was not written on two lines. It was actually written on all on one line. He says, I saw the fifth in the city of Rome, where the Romans had taken it after the Churban. And you have a whole story in Masechet Me'ilah where Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai went to Rome to get the emperor to be mevatel gzeira, a series of gzeiras against the Jewish people, and they cured the emperor's daughter, and therefore the emperor allowed them to go into his treasury and pick whatever they want, and they took the gzeira and ripped it up. So meanwhile, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi says, I saw the tzitz in the Roman emperor's treasury because of Kodesh Lashem b'shidachas, and it says Kodesh Lashem all on one line. So what you're saying it was written on two lines for the covered of Hashem, for the covered of Hashem's name? No, it was all written on one line. It's interesting. Now the Rambam writes, now the other Chachamim obviously don't agree with him on that. They still say, despite what he saw, they say it was written on two lines. So the Rambam writes that what it is that it should be written on two lines, but Rambam Paskin, but it can be written on one line, and sometimes they actually did that. So the tzitz that Rav Eliezer saw was one where one time they wrote it on one line, but that's only a bedikah thing. L'chatchila, they write it on two lines. The Rebbe has a very interesting sikha on this in Chelet Chavav, where he says, just like with the menorah, we know famously that you have the menorah drawn on the arch of Tikkus with round branches, and from that and various other things, yeah, most people think that the menorah had round branches, but we know that Rambam and Rashi write that no, it had straight branches. So what is it? One possibility is that the menorah that's shown over there is not the actual menorah of the Beis Mikdash. It might be some other menorah that they allow, that the Romans are capturing and then looting everything from the Beis Mikdash. So the Jews tried to save as much as possible the original Kalim and hide them away wherever they could. And then they left other Kalim over there that the Goyim could take and things that now they have the Kalim of the Beis Mikdash. So this menorah could have been something like that. It could have been some other menorah that they put over there as an ursatz menorah instead of the real one. So the same thing with the tzitz. It could be that the one that the Romans ended up taking and looting might not be the real one that the Kohen Gadol wore. However, the Rambam would still say that sometimes the fact is, based on what Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi says, it is kosher if it's written in one line, because the fact of the matter is, you had people coming and visiting the Beis Mikdash all the time. They would have seen the Kohen Gadol sometimes wearing the tzitz. If always it was written in two lines, and now they have one written in one line, then the Romans would easily enough realize that they've been fooled. So therefore, occasionally they would have one that was written on one line that the Kohen Gadol would wear, and therefore now they're able to use a one-line one and use it to fool the Romans, and that's the one that the Romans ended up looting. But not to say that usually it wouldn't be written on two lines. There's a whole sikha over there, interesting thing that I've been discussing. Anyway, the point is that the tzitz was not woven. The tzitz was made out of a solid piece of metal with the words Kodesh Lashem engraved on it. So what do you mean? That from there we can learn that even a small piece of cloth, if it was woven by itself, is Makabel Terma. So he solid Rav Dimi l'Nahagah. So later on, when Rav Dimi came to Nahagah, he used to travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babel, Sholach Lahu, he sent a message as follows. Dvorim shamarti lachem torasim biyadi. What I said previously is wrong. You don't actually learn from the tzitz because, yeah, the tzitz was a solid piece of metal. There are, by the way, there are mefoshim, there are achronim. We'll talk about that. You have a gemara in Chulin that mentions that there was a woolen cap sort of or a woolen band that went under the tzitz. So maybe therefore, sort of didn't you originally thought therefore that the tzitz is like that also, that it has a gold component but it also has a woven component. Anyway. So now he's saying no. The correct thing is like this. Bram kach oma mishum Rabbi Yechanan. This is the correct thing they said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Minayim b'tachshit kol shul shul tome. How do we know that a tachshit, that an ornament, no matter how small it is makabel tuma? That we learn the tzitz. That we learn from the tzitz, because the tzitz was only two etzvos wide and still considered a tachshit, it's considered a keli. Uminayim Orig kol shul shul tame, as far as how we know that a woven piece of cloth is a kabel tuma, no matter how small it is, that we learn from a different place, that we learn from the fact that the pasuk is oi beged, or a garment. So the fact that it says or a garment means no matter how small the garment is, as long as it was woven by itself. Which says that by the tuma of shirasim. Okay. Tanarabbanan, so we learn in this connection, a braisa, orig kol shul tame, any size piece of woven cloth can be makabel tuma, even if it's less than 3x3. The tachshit kol shul tame, also an ornament, no matter how small it is, a piece of jewelry or whatever, no matter how small it is able to be makabel tuma, so like an earring or something is makabel tuma. And orig v'tachshit, also something which is partly woven and partly tachshit. So for example, so you have, it's a very small thing. Part of it is, now the choice just points out, the koshkin over here can't mean the tiniest thing, because then it's not really relevant to talk about half ordered, half tachshit, and saying that koshu tame. But the point is, in other words, there has to be even a small piece of jewelry is tame, even a small piece of cloth is tame. And if you have something which is partly a small piece of cloth and partly a tachshit, partly a piece of metal or whatever, then it's also makabel tuma. Musaf sak al beged continues the braisa. Musaf sak al beged, a sack which is made out of goat hair or something, goat hair or regular hair or whatever, is also makabel tuma. Besides the fact that it's a garment, shetome mishum ori. It's tome on the grounds that it is woven. So what does that mean? Omar Rava. The Rava explains that this orig kol shu tame, this, that even a small woven piece of cloth is matame, that we learn oy beged. That, as we said, we learn from the word oy beged, or garment. Tachshit kol shu tame, we said mitzit. We learn that from the tzit. Orig v'tachshit kol shu tame, when we say that something that's combined of orig and tachshit, of woven cloth and metal, let's say, is also makabel tuma, even if it's small, that we learn the kol kli ma'aseh, that we learn from the pasuk in connection with Midyan, where it mentions any kli ma'aseh, where it says that the jewelry that they looted from the Midyanim, so they became tame, and were saying that they have to be matachah then. But one of the Talmidim asks Rava, "Hahu b'minyan k'siv?" Okay, but that pasuk is only talking about Midyan, where there was tumas nes. So you can learn from that that things are tame with tumas nes. How do you know that they're also mekabel tuma from lesser things of tuma, like a sheretz, for example? Amalei goma kli kli mehasam. So he says, because we learn in Gzeder Shabbat on the word kli, by Shrotim it says the word kli, by Midyan it also says kli ma'isa. So therefore we learn in Gzeder Shabbat that whatever applies to one applies to the other, and therefore if something that's combined of origin, tachshit, of cloth and metal, if we're saying it's makabel tuma, because we learn that from Midyan, then we can also say the same thing applies to a sheret on the basis of Gzeder Shabbat. Okay. And then we'll continue tomorrow. The Gemara is going to continue tomorrow analyzing the last part of that braisa about the sack. And then we're going to talk more generally about various things. What's makabel tuma? What kind of sacks are makabel tuma and what are not? Okay.
So the sherets we learned from Xereshava?
But no, the fact that things can be tummy from Tumas Sheret, that it says in the Sukkim, but that a small thing like this, that a small ornament like this, which is not even the whole thing is metal, or not even the whole thing is cloth, it has a piece of cloth with a piece of metal attached, nevertheless, that's Makabel Tumah, we see by Midyan that such a thing is Makabel Tumah, and by Zeta Shabbat, we learn that it's also Makabel Tumah from a Sheret.
So we learn only from the Gzera Shava for a from Midian, basically.
Yeah. So from Midian, we learn that any klimite, so that any kind of jewelry or any kind of ornament is makaf. Well, actually, so we said jewelry or ornaments, we learn from the tzitz. So it's like this again. We say, if the thing is all metal, like the tzitz, then we learn it from the tzitz. If it's all cloth, then we learn it from the word oybege. If it's partly metal and partly cloth, like for example, we had earlier in the parish, we had various kinds of jewelry that women wear, where you have, for example, a cloth backing with gold pieces sewn onto it or whatever. So that kind of thing that we learn, that's the Kabbal Chumah, we learn from the fact that it described it when it described the booty from Midian, it mentions kol klim, it mentions various kinds of jewelry, and it mentions kol klim maisa, any functional keli. So from that we learn that even that kind of thing is Mekabel Trumas Nes. And once we learn it by Midian, that's Mekabel Trumas Nes, then we also learn by Xeda Shava that it's also Mekabel Trumas Trenet.
Mm-hmm. Regarding the cloth, can it be synthetic fibers is called a beged or not?
It's a good question. I don't know. It's a very good question. I think as far as... I don't know, actually. That would be something I'm not sure. I know there are poskim that talk about it in connection with Hilchos Tzitzis, for example, whether you can be yotze the mitzvah of Tzitzis with a polyester beged, let's say. I'm not sure, actually.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So tomorrow, what time?
Okay, so tomorrow, so Shabbos ends about 8:45. So I guess let's say if we're able to do 9:45, then let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.